Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
Grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths. Do you want to talk about the mug?
So, the other set of mugs that my sister got us for Christmas, they're a set again and they nestle. And one is like baby girl pink and the other one's like navy blue or like midnight blue.
Mm-hmm.
And they have notches in them. Starting at the top, it says, too soon, not yet. Okay, I'm ready now. So as you're drinking, people know when they're allowed to speak to you. So you don't eat their face if they talk to you too soon.
Unless, like, you keep refilling it. No one can talk to you.
Well, that would be the perfect thing for me.
I know.
No one ever talking to me.
Just keep the whole pot next to your desk.
Yeah. Like, when Thor's horn was attached to the ocean, but it'll be a coffee mug attached to a coffee pot.
Yes. Exactly.
Perfection. So, it's filled with the Folgers and Hawaiian coffee blend that we had last week.
Mm-hmm.
But we were discussing this weekend how once COVID's over, it'd be really nice if, before we record, go out to, like, coffee shops around the cities
mm-hmm.
nearby and get coffee so that we can rate them during the podcast and say, you know, this coffee came from this coffee shop and it's this kind of brand. And that would be really nice once we can like leave the house without having to think about everything we're doing.
Well, then the other thing was that eventually when we make enough money to do so, we would like to be able to purchase coffee from the retailers online that have them from like, you know, all over the place so we can rate those coffees as well. But anywho's it. Norse Week?
It's Norse Week.
Yay!
Which means I go first.
Yes. I just want to preface this at work. We had this project where we were just doing all this mail stuff, and I got to listen to stuff while I was doing the mail. So I listened to so much Norse mythology over the course of the week on top of my regular work. It was kind of ridiculous. But it gave me a lot of ideas. And I want to make a shout out to WitchyWolf890. She went and sent us a link to this book called In the Days of Giants by Abby Farewell Brown. And it's like a little over 5.5 hours. And it's most of the stuff we've already covered and then some. And I thought it was really good. It was like really cool to listen. Just be aware, different people do talk in the audio portion because it's different people working on the same project mm-hmm. for the audiobook. Anywho, I just wanted to like do a little quick shout out to the listener that gave me that to listen to over the course of the week because it helped a lot.
Sure thing. So I don't remember how I came about deciding to research this, but I ended up doing trolls. And my father likes to call me a troll. I'm hoping affectionately.
Well, also, like, didn't your mom call us trolls yesterday?
She calls us trolls because he calls us trolls. So, sometimes the word trolls referred to Jotuns. But Professor Arman Jacobson says that trolls cannot be clearly defined, but they are certainly negatively looked upon most of the time. We can't say 100% what they look like because of this. So, saying they have XYZ characteristics, that's not going to work, which makes it a little hard to draw. And what I ended up doing was just based off of one type of thing people call trolls, which is like a smaller human-esque creature with a backdrop on Norway with northern lights, and have him standing next to a pile of rocks because, again, that is something that they sometimes do in the stories is being near those piles of rocks. And there's stories and fairy tales, some of which I read like just this week, that talk about trolls. One of was a story of a troll man, and he was a wizard that used evil magics. And the other was a bittersweet tale about a whole village, we'll say.
Oh, dang.
Of trolls. And it had very vague descriptions of the trolls physically, saying mostly that they were small, but more so they had descriptions of where they lived. Like I was saying, underground, beneath stones, in the fields, grave mounds, etc. Their cave was decorated with clutches of sweet willow, crow's foot, which Anyone who knows anything about plants, if you don't have the scientific name, you might have a problem finding the plant because common names can be used on any kind of plant. So crow's foot, even narrowing it down to Scandinavia or Norway specifically, there are still three or four different common named plants named crowfoot. So I can't even tell you what is decorating this place. And then other flowers and a large table.
Have we already discussed the fact that you have a horticulture major?
Yes, I'm pretty sure they are aware.
Okay, I was just making sure that it was already covered.
And that is something that you run into problems with in horticulture quite a bit, which is why, like, when I worked at the gardens, we wouldn't use the whole scientific name, because scientific names are generally made up of two different names.
Mm-hmm.
But we would say, like, instead of saying, you know, go weed the sage bed, it would be go weed the salvia bed.
Oh, okay.
So if you remember in Celtic Week, we mentioned how Eliza's creatures lived around and beneath the large standing stones. The trolls are very similar to that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the creatures themselves, but like where they live.
Got it.
In Scandinavian folklore, there are descriptions of trolls ranging from human-like to old but very strong. They could have also been dim-witted and could turn into stone when touched by sunlight or even man-eating. So that's like the troll from Harry Potter wasn't the smartest creature.
Right.
And the trolls from the TV show Tales of Arcadia, where the sunlight turns them to stone and kills them. Right. That's where they're pulling that from.
Oh, okay.
So Professor Jacobson suggests trolls could also include mountain dwellers, witches, heretics, an evil spirit, a ghost, a demon, a berserker, or even a demigod.
You know, that explains why in Assassin's Creed, every time I go in a place where there's like a curse or something, where there's like a witch,
mm-hmm.
the statement has something to do with trolls instead of like specifically, oh, I think there's a witch here. No, it's like, I sense a troll's curse. And I'm like, it's like encompassing so much.
Right. It was kind of like a group term for supernatural beings. Later on became also including things that were not Christian.
Right.
So we got this book for Christmas from our West Coast family called Nordic Tales, Folk Tales from Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland, and Denmark, which is a collection of public domain fairy tales. Beautifully illustrated by Ulla Thynell. So in it, there is a story called Toller's Neighbors that I'm going to read for you. And it is from Denmark specifically, because each story in here underneath the title has what country it comes from specifically. If you want to look at just Norway tales, you can. Or if you want to look at a different country, you just go to those pages. So Toller's Neighbors. Once upon a time, a young man and a young girl were in service together at a mansion down near Clode Mill in the district of Lysgard. They became attached to each other, and as they both were honest and faithful servants, their master and mistress had a great regard for them and gave them a wedding dinner the day they were married. Their master gave them also a little cottage with a little field, and there they went to live. This cottage lay in the middle of a wild heath, and the surrounding country was in bad repute, for in the neighborhood were a number of old grave mounds, which it was said were inhabited by the mount folk. Though Toller, so the peasant was called, cared little for that. When one only trusts in God, thought Toller, and does what is just and right to all men, one need not be afraid of anything. They had now taken possession of their cottage and moved in all their little property. When the man and his wife, late one evening, were sitting talking together, as to how they could best manage to get on in the world, they heard a knock at the door, and on Toller opening it, in walked a little, little man, and wished them good evening. He had a red cap on his head, a long beard, and long hair, a large hump on his back, and a leathern apron before him, in which he stuck a hammer. They immediately knew him to be a troll. Notwithstanding, he looked so good-natured and friendly that they were not at all afraid of him.
This makes me think of those, like, the garden gnomes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, like, immediately what I'm thinking when you're describing that.
There's quite a few mythical creatures that have red caps. Some of them a lot less friendly than others.
Right.
Now here, Toller, said the little stranger, I see well enough. that you know who I am, and matters stand thus. I am a poor little hillman, to whom people have left no other habitation on earth than the graves of fallen warriors, or mounds, where the rays of the sun can never shine down upon us. We have heard that you are come to live here, and our king is fearful that you will do us harm, and even destroy us. He has therefore sent me to you this evening, that I should beg of you, as amicably as I could, to allow us to hold our dwellings in peace. You shall never be annoyed by us or disturbed by us in your pursuits.
Huh, that sounds nice.
Mm-hmm. Be quite at your ease, good man, said Taller. I have never injured any of God's creatures willingly, and the world is large enough for all of us, I believe. And I think we can manage to agree without the one having any need to do mischief to the other. Well, thank God, exclaimed the little man, beginning in his joy to dance about the room. That is excellent, and we will, in return, do you all the good in our power, and that you will soon discover. But now I must depart. Will you not first take a spoonful of supper with us? Asked the wife, setting a dish of porridge down on the stool near the window. For the man of the mount was so little that he could not reach up to the table. No, I thank you, said the mannikin. Our king is impatient for my return, and it would be a pity to let him wait for the good news I have to tell him. Whereupon the little man bade them farewell and went his way. From that day forward, Taller lived in peace and concord with the little people of the mount. They could see them go in and out of their mounds in daylight, and no one ever did anything to vex them. At length, they became so familiar that they went in and out of Taller's house, just as if it had been their own. Sometimes it happened that they would borrow a pot or a copper kettle from the kitchen, but always brought it back again and set it carefully on the same spot from which they had taken it.
Aww.
They also did all the service they could in return. When the spring came, they would come out of their mounds in the night, gathering all the stones off the arable land, and lay them in a heap along the farrows. At harvest time, they would pick up all the ears of corn, that nothing might be lost to Taller. All this was observed by the farmer, who, when in bed, or when he read his evening prayer, often thanked the Almighty for having given him the mount folk for neighbors. At evening, and Whitsuntide, or in the Christmas holiday, he always set a dish of nice milk porridge out for them, as good as it could be made on the mount. Once, after having given birth to a daughter, his wife was so ill that Taller thought she would near her end. He consulted all the cutting people in the district, but no one knew what to prescribe for her recovery. He sat up every night and watched over the sufferer, that he might be at hand to administer to her wants. Once he fell asleep, and on opening his eyes again towards morning, he saw the room full of the mount folk. One sat and rocked the baby, another was busy cleaning the room, a third stood by the pillow of the sick woman, made a drink of some herbs, which he gave his wife. As soon as they observed that Taller was awake, they all ran out of the room. But from that night, the poor woman began to mend, and before a fortnight was passed, she was able to leave her bed and go about her household work, well and cheerful as before.
Aww.
Another time, Taller was in trouble for want of money to get his horses shod before he went to town. He talked the matter over with his wife, and they knew not well what course to adopt. But when they were in bed, his wife said, "Art thou asleep, Taller?" "No," he answered. "What is it?" "I think," she said, "there's something the matter with the horses in the stable. They are making such a disturbance." Taller rose, lighted his lantern, and went to the stable, and on opening the door found it full of the little mount folk. They had made the horses lie down, because the mannikins could not reach up to them. Some were employed in taking off the old shoes, some were filing the heads of the nails, while others were tacking on the new shoes, and the next morning, when Taller took his horses to water, he found them shod so beautifully that the best smiths could not have shod them better. In this manner, the mount folk and Taller rendered all the good services they could to each other, and many years passed pleasantly. Taller began to grow an old man, his daughter was grown up, and his circumstances were better every year. Instead of the little cottage in which he began the world, he now owned a large and handsome house, and the naked wild heath was converted into fruitful, arable land. One evening, just before bedtime, someone knocked at the door, and the man of the mount walked in. Taller and his wife looked at him with surprise, for the mannikin was not in his usual dress. He wore on his head a shaggy cap, a woolen handkerchief round his throat, and a great sheepskin cloak covered his body. In his hand he had a stick, and his countenance was very sorrowful. He brought a greeting to Taller from the king, who requested that he, his wife, and little Inger would come over to them in the mount that evening, for the king had a matter of great importance about which he wished to talk with him. The tears ran down the little man's cheeks while he said this, and when Taller tried to comfort him and inquired into the source of his trouble, the man of the mount only wept the more, but would not impart the cause of his grief. Taller, his wife, and daughter then went over to the mount. On descending into the cave, they found it decorated but with bunches of sweet willow, crow's foot, and other flowers that were to be found on the heath. A large table was spread from one end of the cave to the other. When the peasant and his family entered, they were placed at the head of the table by the side of the king. The little folk also took their places and began to eat, but they were far from being as cheerful as usual. They sat and sighed and hung down their heads, and it was easy to see that something had gone amiss with them. When the repast was finished, the king said to Taller, "I invited you to come over to us because we all wish to thank you for having been so kind and friendly to us during the whole time we have been neighbors. But now there are so many churches built in the land, and all of them have such great bells, which ring so loudly morning and evening, that we can bear it no longer. We are therefore going to leave Jutland and pass over to Norway, as the great number of our people have done long ago. We now wish you farewell, Taller, as we must depart."
Aww.
When the king had said this, all the mount folk came and took Taller by the hand and bade him farewell, and the same to his wife. When they came to Inger, they said, "To you, dear Inger, we will give a remembrance of us, that you may think of the little mount people when they are far away." And as they said this, each took up a stone from the ground and threw it into Inger's apron. They left the mount one by one, the king leading the way. Taller and his family remained standing on the mount as long as they could discern them. They saw the little trolls wandering over the heath, each with a wallet on his back and a stick in his hand. When they had gone a good part of the way to where the road leads down to the sea, they all turned round once more and waved their hands to say farewell. Then they disappeared, and Taller saw them no more. Sorrowfully, he returned to his home. The next morning, Inger saw that all the small stones the mount folk had thrown into her apron shone and sparkled, and were real precious stones. Some were blue, others brown, white, and black, and it was the trolls who had imparted the color of their eyes to the stones, that Inger might remember them when they are gone, and all the precious stones which we now see shine and sparkle only because the mount folk have given them the color of their eyes, and it was some of these beautiful precious stones which they once gave to Inger.
Wow.
So as I said, it was bittersweet. But this would be a good example of the not evil troll versus, for example, the evil troll that was from the magician's pupil, which is also in this story. And as we say, trolls are found in many movies and games, especially specifically being called trolls. But then if you use that even looser translation of, you know, witches, heretics, all that, they're in just about everything.
Right.
So that's trolls.
All right. And we're going to take a short commercial break and we'll be right back. And we're back. So, unlike the trolls, I'm talking about what most commonly is known as the draugr. However, when I was researching this, I found out that they're actually called aftergänga, which translates to afterwalker or again walker. A lot of you will have probably heard of them from Skyrim, Elder Scrolls, whole lot of stories in video games. It's the Norse equivalent to a zombie. They are created when a man dies under certain conditions. And when I say man, it could be man or woman, according to the legends I did see. Created when a man or woman dies under certain conditions, which is dying sitting upright, dying with your eyes open, dying disappointed specifically in your son, which I just thought was hilarious, or dying in your house. Common behaviors include riding cattle, terrorizing and killing cattle, riding structures on the roof, and riding their wives and killing their wives with their large hunger for it. And by riding, I am talking about sex.
Jeez.
Yes.
Well, no, because, like, the one before that was also riding, but it was, like, the roof.
The roof. Yeah. Yeah. Like, that was... So, that specific trait explanation came from watching a video from Dr. Crawford, which was separate from the one that you and I both had watched.
Yeah, that was an accident.
Yeah. There was a video by... It was, like, Dr. Crawford and...
Professor Jacobson that I referenced.
Professor Jacobson. They talked on, like, the day before Halloween, 2020, 2019?
It said a year ago, so I'm guessing it
2019. Was 2019. So, they talked about the afterlife and the different types of spirits, so to speak, from Norse mythology. And one of the main things that I found was that when they're talking about ghosts or spirits in Norse mythology, they're not talking about, like, an apparition. They're talking about a physical being that is a spirit or what have you. It is not just, like, something where you can put your hand through. It's actually physically there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will go over some of the other traits of Draugr, but I was specifically talking about the Aftergenga from what I watched before. And what was specifically talked about, that's a very famous one, is from the Urbygja saga, translated back in the day into the saga of the Ear Dwellers, about a very specific Aftergenga.
I do not like that it's called the Ear Dwellers.
Yeah.
That's perturbing.
Isn't it? It's like a nice little horror story. So late in the saga, there is a troublemaker named Thorolf, the lame foot, or lame leg. And late in his life, he goes to his son. Now, before I get into that, by troublemaker, I mean he's a very terrible person. He's a terrible piece of human being.
Oh, that is definitely not what I would have taken from troublemaker.
No, but that's like, no, like he's a troublemaker. No, he's like a terrible human being. So, that being said, so he goes to his son, Arnkell, to ask if his son will help him rob a neighbor of theirs. Since Thorolf has this lame foot from an altercation from earlier in his life, and his son refuses, and Thorolf gets super disappointed in his son for saying no. Strike one. So he goes home and dies upright in his home with his eyes open, 2 and 3.
Right. Four,
yeah, in his home. Arnkell goes to the house and approaches the body from behind and puts clothes over Thorolf, possibly to cover the eyes, we don't really know. And drags the body out with knocking the wall out. There's a possible speculation that the belief is that, like vampires, the undead should not go through doorways if not invited after death.
Mm.
And that's why it's possible that, like, instead of just taking him through the door, he punched one of the walls out and dragged the body. Arnkell buries the dead Thorolf in a mound, and that night, Thorolf comes back and starts causing trouble. He kills cattle, birds, and a sheep herder complains about Thorolf chasing him at night until one day the sheep herder is found dead with every bone in his body broken.
Oof.
Yes. Thorolf goes to his old house to sleep with his wife, and it makes the wife go crazy and she too eventually dies. There was a lot of evidence that there are characteristics akin to vampires in this case of the Aftergenga. They are alike in the way that, much like vampires, they can make those they kill turn into their own kind.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yes. So, those killed by Thorolf are also seen to come back from the dead and walk with him.
So he's got his wife and he's got a sheep herder.
Yes.
Did it happen to say if it also includes the animals that he killed?
I don't know about that. I didn't see that. Arnkell goes to the burial after all of this and finds the body not decomposed and it's bloated.
Oof.
And so he gets steers to bury the body. But the steers drop the body and run off before they get to their destination, and the body is so heavy that they decide to bury Thorolf right then and there. They don't have any issues with Thorolf after that for a time being. Eventually, Arnkell dies, and Thorolf comes back into his undead walking business. That's how I wrote it. As soon as Arnkell dies, Thorolf goes after a man both Arnkell and Thorolf had dealt with in their waking lives named Thorod. Now, Thorod goes to the new burial mound and unearths the body to find it undecomposed, bloated as big as an ox, and the literal translation of how what it states is that he was also blue as hell. Like, his body was the color blue.
Mm-hmm.
They roll the body down to the beach and burn it after it takes forever for getting the body to catch fire, and they throw the ashes into the ocean. The wind carries some of these ashes that were thrown onto a nearby rock, where one of Thorod's calves licks up the ashes and eventually gives birth to a bull calf and dies giving birth to it.
Aww.
It is huge and grows much faster than normal bull calves. Thorod's old and blind foster mother warns Thorod, when she hears the bull calf moo, that the voice is of a troll, and then Thorod ignores her wishes and just kills another calf to shut her up on the matter. Thorod ends up hiding this monster bull calf in a barn and calls it Glasser, which means glossy. Not after too long, the woman hears the mooing again and warns Thorod, and he ignores her. One day, when it rains, Glasser decides to tear through Thorod's haystacks. Thorod runs to Glossy with a large log in his hand and smacks Glossy with it, and the log shatters, and this leads to a wrestling match. Thorod's men end up coming out with their spears, attempting to help Thorod. But before they got to him, Thorod got a bullhorn into his chest.
Ooh.
The men chase Glossy into a nearby swamp, and Glossy sinks into the swamp, never to be seen again. They go back to Thorod to find he had taken himself to bed and died.
Mm.
There are other sagas with Afterwalkers, such as the one, the Saga of the People of Laxardale. Another story from that same saga is a woman named Thorgunna, who is being transported by men to be laid to rest after she dies, and the men decide to stop at this farmstead on the way. In the middle of the night, they wake up to see an undead Thorgunna, completely bare-ass naked, preparing a dinner table for all of them, and when they try to say anything to her, she just disappears. She walks off. So they sprinkle holy water on the food and eat the food without harm and go on their merry way and lay her to rest, and then she's never seen again undead.
A lot less trouble than that first one.
Yeah, I was like, what the literal F? Okay, so the Draugr is an undead being in Norse mythology. Many of you may know them from very famous games such as Elder Scrolls, Skyrim, and God of War. But those games don't usually go into the mythology behind them and how terrifying their tale really is. In Old Norse, Draugr is defined as a ghost, spirit, dead inhabitant of a cairn. Although this is the meaning, they were often more regarded as an animated corpse than simply a ghost or apparition, such as a revenant. Also, according to some of the research I did this past week, you are more likely to turn into a Draugr, or Aftergenga, if you're not all that great of a person in your waking life, and by not all that great, I mean a terrible person. And literally, this is what the explanation was. Any mean, nasty, or greedy person can become one. And their primary motivation is jealousy or greed. Their traits usually contain superhuman strength, generally hideous to look at, bearing a necrotic black color associated with the reek of decay, also to be death blue or corpse pale. And I can definitely say that I have seen what a corpse looks like while it's decaying, not because I've killed anyone, but because I've actually been to a morgue. They are noted for having numerous magical abilities, such as shape-shifting, controlling the weather, and seeing into the future. They also have the ability of entering the dreams of the living, and often leave a gift behind so the person knows how tangible the actual visit was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. They can curse victims, bring disease, could create temporary darkness and daylight hours, prefer to be active in at night, but there's no evidence that daytime actually hurts them. They can kill people with bad luck. Some are immune to weapons, and only heroes with courage could fight them. In those stories, the hero would need to wrestle the Draugr back to their grave. Iron could injure a Draugr, but would not be sufficient to stop it. Sometimes, heroes had to dispose of the body in unconventional ways. For example, cut off the head, burn the body, and dump the ashes at sea, just to be sure it's completely gone.
Very similar to vampires.
Yeah, yes. As far as tales go, the most popular Draugr is one named Glamr, who was defeated by the hero of the saga, Grettis Saga. After Glamr died on Christmas Eve, people realized he was not resting in peace and wreaked such havoc that people fainted at the mere sight of him and others went crazy. After a battle, Grettir gets Glamr on his back, and just before Grettir kills Glamr, Glamr curses Grettir. It was said that Glamr was endowed with more evil force than most other ghosts, which is why the curse was able to haunt him after death. To prevent people from turning into Draugr, a pair of open iron scissors was placed on the chest of the recently deceased. Straws and twigs might be hidden among their clothes, big toes were tied together, or needles were driven through the soles of the feet in order to keep the dead from being able to walk. Your face, you can't see Leah's face right now, but she is grossed out. It was also a tradition that the coffin should be lifted and lowered in three different directions as it was carried from the house to confuse a possible draugr's sense of direction. The most effective means was believed to be a corpse door, which is a special door through which the corpse was carried feet first with people surrounding it so the corpse couldn't see where it was going. The door was then bricked up to prevent a return. There is a speculation that the belief began in Denmark and spread throughout Norse culture, founded on the idea that the dead only leave through the way they entered. From the saga called Erbigja, which is the same from Thorolf, draugr are driven off by holding a door doom. One by one, they are summoned to the door doom and given judgment and forced out of the home by this legal method. The home is then purified with holy water to ensure that they never come back. I went looking to find what a door doom was, and all I could find when looking at the saga specifically in summary is that they said it was a combination of Christian rituals and Icelandic common laws being used. I look up door doom and all I keep on getting is, play game, doom, this is how you play doom, here's this level for doom. And I'm like, I'm not playing doom, I'm trying to find what door doom is. Like, in one...
one very specific text. That's interesting that, like, part of it is, like, legalities.
Yeah.
Like, you can't come back in here.
It's illegal. The draugr is not to be confused with a hogger, which is a barrow mound dweller. These guys cannot leave their gravesite and only attack those who trespass on their territory. From my research, they also wanted to make certain that the concept of a barrow wight being what a draugr is was translated, or a term, that came back in 1869, which was before J.R.R. Tolkien used this term in his novels. So, if you see barrow wight, it's a draugr, basically.
Okay. Although, what we know as a draugr.
Yes, what we know as a draugr. Although barrow wight is actually more of a hogger than a draugr.
Because it won't leave.
Because it won't leave its dwelling.
So, the ones in Skyrim are more like
hogger. Yes.
Okay.
I know they say that they're draugr, but they're not, like, they're not following you out of the fucking... I've never experienced them following me great distance outside of the mounds.
Mm-mm. No, they're usually, like, right in the hall where they were laid.
Yeah. In more recent folklore, they're identified with spirits of mariners drowned at sea. And when I saw that, it was interesting because they say they look like normal people. It's just that they have seaweed all up in them. So all I kept thinking was Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. With Davy Jones, and I'm like, oh my goodness. Basically, I'm gonna probably do an undead warrior-esque looking being, but I mean, like, I thought it was interesting because they're really more like the baddies of society.
Yeah.
Not, like, you can't just be, like, a normal, decent person and become a draugr. You have to be, like, a fucked up person, and then you have to follow these, like, different things.
Mm-hmm.
Just thought it was kind of intriguing. I found out so much about Norse mythology this last week. Oh my goodness. I just can't. But I'm still intrigued to learn more because I know it's only like brushing the surface.
Right.
What was interesting about that video that we both watched
by
accident. Like, seriously, it was like two separate occasions. I watched it completely separate from her. And then she's like, hey, have you watched this video? And I was like, yep.
That is the one I was telling you about.
Yeah.
Because in it, it's like an hour-long video, and they talk about trolls and the undead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Professor Jacobson goes into how, even though they're called ghosts sometimes, they are physical beings. And he does say, you know, referencing them as zombies would probably be the best way for us as, like, modern people
to understand
what he's saying.
Right.
So, yeah, it was actually really good. I kept getting distracted, though, because you were playing Valhalla. So, like, unless you're really good with accents, you have to pay very close attention to what he's saying. And, like, I'd be like, look, you're fighting a bad guy. And then I'd have to be like, no, pay attention.
Yeah. In the course of, what, it's been 2 weeks since I received it? So, in the course of the 2 weeks, I'm already up to level 270-something.
Yeah. You were blazing through that bad
boy. I am blazing through this game. Like, it's not even funny. Yep. Next week is Japanese. We still have
a grab bag week.
We're still open for suggestions if anyone wants to give any. Otherwise, I've got some ideas. I haven't quite picked anything specific yet because I want to remain open in case anybody has any specific suggestions. With that being said, do you want to...
close out? Sure.
Yeah.
Reminders, everybody, make sure to check out our art for this week's entities on our Instagram at Coffee Table Mythos. If you want to share any art of your own, make sure to use our hashtag Coffee Table Mythos so that we and our followers can check them out. As always, if you have any stories or requests, please email us at coffeetablemythos@gmail.com. And remember to mention if you want a shout out of either a name or a handle and where to find you, or if you would like to remain anonymous. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Coffee Table Mythos, where you can message us as well.
Check out our merch on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos. We are adding more listings as we research more beings and make more art. If you would like to donate to us, you can on anchor.fm/coffeetablemythos, or you can become a patron through patreon.com/coffeetablemythos. For right now, all donations will go to making this podcast better. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, share, and review our podcast if you have the time. We are interested in what you have to say. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time. Before we close out,
close out,
I just want to make a mention. I just want to let the listeners know we are not always checking our Instagram as far as, like, comments go. So if it's a little delayed on the response, we are sorry. We do have full-time jobs on top of doing this. So we will eventually get to you and we will eventually talk to you. It's just we're very, very sorry if it's like, if it takes us a second to realize, oh, I have a message, or oh, we have a comment that is asking a question and actually wants a response.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho's it. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next time.